You're listening to the Noble and Root Show, brought to you by Ball is Life and Dash Radio.
Welcome to another episode of the Noble and Roosh Show, hosted by Ball is Life. I'm your host, Roosh Williams, with my co-host, Zach Noble. And today we got Jared Greenberg in the building. Jared, how are you doing?
Doing great, fellas. Good to be back with you talking hoops again. And crazy to think that we're almost at the halfway point of the season already.
No, it doesn't feel like it at all.
No.
It feels like the season's still getting started, you know?
It's kind of weird. It feels like a big blur for me. You know, I think we're all like kind of creatures of habit. And, you know, to have, I was in the bubble during, for three straight months. And that just felt like a blur. Can't believe that that was as long ago as it was. And then just rolled right into the next season. It almost feels like that was part of this season. And last season was like its own like individual island of weirdness.
Yeah, it's like this, like it's like basketball island, dude. It makes no sense. Even in retrospect, when you look back on it, like Zach and I have talked about this, teams like the Heat, right? You wonder, was that a product of that weird experience? And like, should we go do like a retroactive case study on what the hell that whole thing was, you know?
Well, I was saying the whole time I was in the bubble that it felt like a social experiment, the whole thing. And I felt like, you know, I was going to find out in 30 years from now, they were doing studies on me that I never knew was happening in real time, right? Like, you know, that whole thing about twins being adopted or, you know, separated into different families and then how they adapted to different lives afterwards. I don't know. it's just weirdness. And yeah, like the whole Heat thing, not to go off on a tangent about it, but you picked up on little things while being in the bubble. And one of the little things that we were wondering if we were overanalyzing, and now I wonder if we weren't paying enough attention to, was just like how much those dudes liked each other in the bubble. And listen, you still have to have talent. You still have to go out and play good basketball and things still have to go your way. But there were other teams, not to say that dudes were like fighting with each other in the hallways or out on the, like the pickleball court, but there were other teams that weren't as close and probably didn't enjoy being around each other 24/7 as much as the Miami Heat did. And for that matter, the Lakers too.
Yeah.
You just wonder how much all that stuff matters.
Zach, I'm going to let you jump in, but I just want to say, I agree with you because there's a rhythm chemistry component to basketball that I think got magnified in the bubble, right? Yeah. Like you start like, I mean, they're human beings at the end of the day. I know we view them as like elite athletes, right, which they are, but they're humans and people give up, man. So like you can be on a team that doesn't have the resolve. We talked to Troy Daniels, who was on the Nuggets team that made 2-3-1 comebacks. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how, you know, Jamal Murray was like, man, I don't want to go home. So we're not going home. And he said that was rare. And a lot of people might have otherwise just been like, fuck this, pack it in, dude. We're good.
No, there's no question. There were definitely dudes who, you know, I'm not going to name names, but you could tell they were checked out. They did not want to be there. And then there are other people who either did have families and were happy not to be around their family. And there were other people who weren't around their family and missed their family, right? Like it was, and we can't just lump it into one thing. Everybody had their own scenario.
And to all of that, when you got LeBron James on your team, who's, you know, known for being one of the most driven, disciplined, like hungry players ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't help but think like how big, like obviously it's an advantage having LeBron James on your team, but that is an intangible that I think is an enormous advantage. So no, Zach.
I mean, everybody publicly knows how big of a family guy LeBron is. And when he says no family, this is it. This is grind time.
Yeah.
You better be all in. And
no question.
I mean, yeah, from that Troy Daniels interview too, he said it. I mean, it's a boot camp every day with LeBron. I mean, it's,
yeah, you know, Troy knows
fun because it's fun because he win, you know. Yep. It's not fun if you're not winning and you're playing with LeBron, that's for sure. But let's stay on Miami a little bit and transferring over from the bubble to now. We've gotten past that point where teams have worked out the early season kinks where all the bad teams can get off the hot starts. You got the Cavs, those type of teams doing really good early. Orlando started hot. Atlanta even was really good. But yeah, I mean, a part of that's because of other teams dealing with injuries and COVID and whatnot. But there's always that early season, just guys taking advantage of others because they're just, it's a feeling process. So I think Miami is actually going to be for real when it's all said and done. I don't think it was a bubble thing, even though, yes, I agree with everything you guys said. They were a tight-knit group, and I believe they still are, though. That's the thing. I just think Jimmy Butler's injuries and...
Well, I don't think they're trash. I just think that they are that 4 or 5 seed that they were prior to the bubble, if that makes sense. You know, I think they're that good. I don't think they're a finals run type team, personally.
So you think by the end of the season, they're going to be in the playoff picture? Right now, they're a game and a half out of the 8th seed.
They'll be in the playoffs, but they're not getting past Philly. They're not getting past Brooklyn. They're not getting past Milwaukee again.
What seed do you think they'll get? Do you already guess?
4, 5, 6, anywhere between 4 and 6.
Jared?
Yeah, I'd probably say about 6. You know, the East is so freaking weird right now where, you know, the Wizards, who a week ago we were talking about being in contention with Minnesota to be the worst team in basketball, are now literally, if I do my math correctly, 3 games in the loss column away from home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs.
Freaking unbelievable.
Like, it's stupid. So it's tough to look at all this. The other part of it, and listen, I know we all kind of know this, but I just want to throw this out there. Every team has dealt with a different level of the health and safety protocol. And I also think that this season, as I mentioned at the beginning, like, you know, we're all creatures of habit when we work in sports or the media, and we're used to doing things a certain way. And this is not to make excuses for anybody, because everybody has it this way, but there are certain teams that just have been really thrown out of rhythm and quite frankly, haven't had the opportunity for any stretch of time to have their core group on the floor without that getting disrupted. Or having young players learn how to play with older players. And I also think, too, which is going to be really interesting here, we haven't had that many games over the last couple of weeks, aside from, you know, obviously the Spurs and Hornets have been affected, but there really haven't been that many games over the last 2 weeks that have been disrupted. I just hope people value games today and tomorrow as much as they would at the end of the season, because we don't know if everybody's going to be able to play 72 games this year. Like, that's the ideal scenario. That it doesn't seem likely for a team like the Washington Wizards, for example, because they had 6 games postponed. Will they find a way to make those 6 games up? I know they've made 2 of them up, I believe, already in the first half. But, like, you can't go into thinking that a game is not important, which is why it pisses me off that Brooklyn doesn't take teams that are bad seriously. Because that one game could be the difference between you getting the 1 or the 2 seed or the 4 or the 5 seed. So I just want to kind of throw that out there. And for just getting back to what you're saying, you know, I do think Miami ultimately is a playoff team. And I get back to this to say, I don't believe the Knicks are going to hang around. I don't believe Chicago is going to hang around. You know, and I just think things are going to start to make a lot more sense, hopefully, when we get teams with a longer stretch of everybody playing together. The only problem with that is I have a real fear for what the first 2 weeks after the All-Star break is going to look like to the NBA schedule.
No, so Washington Wizards, I mean, you said it perfectly. I mean, teams got to take every game seriously. Yeah, I know Russ was out quite a bit and their roster was in and out with injuries just as much as anybody, but they're 8-8 on the season against teams 500 or better. They're 3-9 against teams with sub 500 records. So what, I mean, that says a lot right there. That Bradley Beal, I mean, wants to play a little more defense when the lights are on. And it says something. They're on a 5-game winning streak right now. Russ is looking healthy, and I'm so happy for that, because that guy was getting nailed, getting drilled every which angle. And I don't want Russ to go out like that. I think he's still young enough where he should have 3 or 4 years left. I mean, I think the Wizards are going to be right in that 8th. I mean, they're definitely going to be in the play-in game just because how well they're playing now. I mean,
wow.
Did you have them there before the year like us? And where do you see the Wizards finish?
I had them competing for a play-in spot, you know, 9 or 10. I didn't necessarily think they'd be top 8. But I don't, you know, again, the Wizards probably weren't as bad as they were at their worst, and they're certainly not 5 straight wins good, right? Like, they're somewhere... there's somewhere in the middle, probably actually closer to being bad than they are good. But Bradley Beal, I think, is the real deal. And I think that they need to figure out how to play with one another with these young guys who I really love their young core. And listen, losing Thomas Bryant is going to be massive for them. He actually was having a fantastic season. But Rui, I think, is going to be tremendous. Denny, I think, has shown flashes of being, you know, pretty good. I hate to throw shade here, but the Russell Westbrook component to me is just the one that doesn't make sense. And you look at last night and you say, what do you have, 30, 31, 32 points? And it's like, oh, yeah, see, he helped you beat the Lakers. But that is such a false sense of reality. It's such smoke and mirrors. It's
why do you say that?
Because none of that ever translates to big game postseason success for him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't ever take into consideration time, score, and situation. He just wants to play his way all the time. And because he's so freaking talented, he's going to win regular season games. Yeah. But there's a reason why he's never been able to get out of the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to run this by you, Roosh. This is the type of play Russ had when he was streaking last year in the middle of the season for the Rocks last year. The last five games when they're 5-0, Russ has only shot 9 three-pointers.
Yep.
I mean, he was shooting like 5-6 a game before this five-game stretch here. So that says a lot. It's like, why can't he play like that all the time?
Yeah.
I'm a Rockets fan, so I could talk to you about Russell Westbrook all day. I mean, I agree with you, Jared. There's a portion of the internet that hates me for having that opinion.
Well, I'm with you. The Twitter has been all over me for years, and yeah. I'm an MVP voter, and I will openly tell you I did not vote for Russell Westbrook the year he won MVP.
Attaboy.
I appreciate that. That drove me and many Houstonians crazy. It made absolutely no sense, and it's the most, you know, goalpost shifting MVP voting I've ever seen. But yeah, I mean, look, he's not efficient. He's only efficient when he's getting to the basket and finishing, which he's shown that he can do. And he can do it at a high level, but it doesn't work in the playoffs because teams can just zone you out of it because he can't shoot reliably enough. So the biggest thing with him, in my opinion, like often we always focus on offense. He's really poor defensively, cool. Not because he's not capable, but just because he's not tuned into the team scheme. He's always playing an individual game of defense and he ball watches a lot.
That's the biggest thing for me. And I could go off on a tangent. I don't mean to eat into your show here because I know there's a lot of good topics you guys have. And people have sent in a lot of cool questions that I hope we get to. But the biggest thing for me with Russ is, number one, I'm on his case so much because I think he is so talented. And I think he could be so good. But there are just things that I've heard from players in the locker room with him and seen with my own eyes that just boggle my mind. And the biggest thing is this. I'm sick and tired of hearing former players tell me, well, look how hard he plays. Congratulations. That's your job to play hard. But second of all, does he really play hard? Does he? Because that's all people want to talk about. Yeah, he plays hard when the ball's in his hands. Yeah, he plays hard when the man he's guarding has the ball. But when he doesn't have the ball on offense and when he's not guarding the ball on defense, he's got cement bricks tied to his feet. The dude doesn't move unless it's about him. And that's what bothers me because I think he could be so incredibly impactful on a game, especially late in games, and drive defenses nuts. But because he's so predictable, he becomes easy to guard.
Well, this is the last thing I'll say before we full on get into Westbrook, because I don't want to end up in there. But I will say his athleticism is elite.
Right.
And it's unfortunate because he would be best served at this stage of his career mixing in a lot of off-ball movement to capitalize on his athleticism instead of just being dominant and on the ball. Like we saw.
What do you think Kevin Durant thought the year he left OKC to go to Golden State after playing with Westbrook for all those years?
Christ.
And then now seeing Steph Curry, who's coming off of winning two MVPs in a row, and Curry runs like freaking Ray Allen around like he's, you know, not even an all-star. But yet he's a two-time MVP, and he got Russell Westbrook, who won't move.
Yeah.
Oh, Durant's been chilling for many years, and it's crazy how good he can just be going 70% when you got the.
Sorry for taking us there, fellas.
You're good. You're good. I mean, look, the thing is, I completely agree with you. I've just been roasted by every section of the internet that I just leave it alone at this point. Like it is what it is. But I do agree with you. I mean, it's just crazy, and it really speaks to shooting. I mean, shooting opens the game up, and the reason that, you know, Russ has these, whatever you want to call them, tendencies, issues, whatever, it's because he can't really shoot. If he could, his game would be totally different. But that aside,
Well, I was just going to say the one final comment I have is the funny thing is it's almost like the J.R. Smith thing where so I host a show on NBA TV called Crunch Time. It's like our version of the Red Zone channel. We bounce around from game to game to game on Wednesdays and Fridays. And typically the Wizards are usually playing on a Wednesday or Friday. And I love it because we check in on Bradley Beal a lot, see how he's doing. But if we ever do like an early game live look, and or I get a highlight from my producer in my ear that we're going to do something real quick on the Wizards, you almost and you see Russell Westbrook pulling up from three, I almost get into the mindset of the opponent. You want him to make it. You want him to make that first three, just like J.R. Smith, because he is now going to think he is Reggie Miller or he is Steph Curry, and he's just going to keep shooting. And that's the worst thing that happens.
And listen, as a Rockets fan, the inverse of that was when he'd do that and make one, well, he'd make one. And then for me and however many other Rockets fans, I don't know, but at least for me, I would think, oh, damn it. Now he's going to keep shooting threes, you know, because he'd make the first one or make one of two. And then he gets confident. And then eventually he shoots one of six or, you know, two of seven or whatever. I think he's shooting better this season to his credit, but whatever. All that to say, I had Washington winning a play-in game. And I, ironically enough, the reason I had them winning a play-in game before the season started was because of Russell Westbrook. I figured he would just give them enough of a motor to win out that eighth spot in the East that is typically up for grabs for some, you know, under 500 team. Why not his? And that was kind of my, I mean, obviously on top of everything else, Bradley Beal and everything else. So we'll see what happens. And I was also going to say, as a Rockets fan, you're totally right about COVID, man. The Rockets haven't had Victor Oladipo, Christian Wood and John Wall play, but three games together. They're actually 3-0 in those games. I think they've only played like 52 minutes together total. So a lot of teams are dealing with it. Miami definitely got hit with it. But Jared, shifting gears, I want to ask you, so far, what's been your biggest surprise? Which team or player or head coach?
You know, no, I think,
keep her on team for now.
Yeah. I will say probably my biggest surprise is probably Philadelphia. I don't know if that's taking the easy way out here. I'm trying not to do that. That's why I was thinking about it for so long, but just like there has been, And listen, there still has to be plenty more to do. And I've been, again, speaking of the Twitter trolls, I take the brunt of the whole Philadelphia thing all the time because it bothers me beyond when people say that the process has been completed or the process is over. Like the process is still very much in the process because the whole goal of the process started because they didn't want to be a first round and out playoff team or a team that just middled, you know, from fourth in the standings to sixth in the standings every year. They broke up a team that actually could have done that for many years to come in order to become a team that was a sustained championship contender. Whether you win a championship or not, it was about being realistically a competitor for a championship, and they haven't become that. So they have a lot more to accomplish still to come. But with that said, I have never seen night in and night out Joel Embiid be this determined to be good. I had a conversation in the bubble with a high-ranking member of the Sixers organization who basically laid it out to me that in the past, Joel Embiid would be just okay, especially on a night when he knew he was taking on an inferior team, to take off the first half because he could just turn it on and dominate the second half. And there were plenty of times where he was right. Embiid could do that. But because, and this is me talking, because he was in such bad shape and because he didn't know necessarily how that would play out, there'd be plenty of times where he wouldn't be able to flip the switch or he'd get himself into too big of a hole. I just feel like now we're seeing a Joel Embiid who is so locked in. And I don't know. I mean, is he in that much better shape? I don't know. Like we keep on hearing he is, and the numbers are looking like he is. But for me, the key thing is getting to the playoffs and his availability, right? Let's face it. He's been treated with kid gloves by this organization since he got drafted. And too often, they instill the mindset, not just in Embiid, but in everybody, it's okay, we'll get it tomorrow. Or it's okay, next month is when it counts. Or, you know, it's okay, it's not about this season, it's about two seasons from now. It's finally now about now. And he is proving to his credit that it is about now, and he's taking it seriously. And I hope his body's in shape. And a lot of times when he missed time in the playoffs the last couple of years, it's either been because of injury or illness. Right. And you can't tell me as a human being that your body not being in the best possible shape has anything to do with, or doesn't have anything to do with sickness and illness. Cause it does, right? Like we all know that, like you're more susceptible to getting a common cold if you put yourself in vulnerable situations or you're not in great physical shape, right? That's just like, you don't have to be a doctor to figure that out. So I feel like he has taken the right steps. We just need to now see it for a long period of time.
I think he is in better shape. I just, by watching him, I can't tell by his body per se, but I think by the way he's running and just being able to go at it at game in, game out, every possession and taking very little time off. The Sixers really haven't surprised me a ton just by being able to space the floor. And Tobias Harris, if there's anybody who surprised me, it's how good he's been. He's been an all-star this season. If there was 15 spots or 17 spots, the dude, I mean, he's right there in the running. I mean, if they had the Jazz record, they probably would have three guys in. But they don't. So my big question is, are these guys a true contender, or how much are they missing? I'm not to the point where I think they are a true contender yet. I think they're an Eastern Conference Finals contender. I think as long as Brooklyn's healthy, they're going to beat them in five or six. I really believe that.
My only problem with that is I feel like the description you just gave, you could easily label on every one of the quote unquote top teams in the Eastern Conference. Like, we just don't feel great. There's something missing about everyone in the East. There's something that makes you feel a little empty about the Bucks, sure, about the Sixers, about Miami, if you want to throw them in, certainly about Boston and about Brooklyn. I mean, listen, there's too much unknown. Should they be? Yes. But are they? I don't know yet. I don't know that yet.
Well, I will propose this. I mean, is Embiid in better shape? I think absolutely. The answer to that question has to be absolutely, if you've been watching him. But I think this is one of the rare examples, at least recently, of, look, with NBA narratives, we sometimes romanticize these stupid stereotypes, right? Like, oh, he just needs the right head coach, or, you know, like Doc Rivers. I'm getting to Doc Rivers, but Embiid needs Doc Rivers to, you know, set him right or something like that, right? I would never say, yes, that's the case, but maybe that is the case. Maybe he just needed the structure of a coach like Doc Rivers, or maybe he just needs a figure that he actually respects like Doc.
Well, somebody made the comment to me the other day, and I hadn't thought about it this way, but it makes a lot of sense. As much praise as Doc Rivers is getting and will get, particularly if Joel Embiid wins MVP,
is going to dissipate in the playoffs?
No. How bad do you feel for Brett Brown?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like this guy, we have not heard a peep from him since getting let go. And we're not hearing him on TV broadcasts. Like, it'd be great. I'd love it if he came down to Atlanta and did a broadcast with us on NBA TV or TNT, but haven't heard him in the media. And he was like a media darling when he was a coach of the Sixers, particularly the years that they were tanking. Like, I could literally have him on the radio show 4 days a week that I was doing on SiriusXM at the time. Like, he was always available.
He's fantastic.
He was great, and he still is. And I don't know that he deserves as much blame as he's going to get, especially if Embiid wins MVP or if the Sixers go to the NBA Finals. But he's certainly going to feel the brunt of it.
Yeah, I mean, I disagreed with his X's and O's on a lot of things, but obviously he's not a bad coach. This is also, though, I mean, it's the product of multiple things, right? Like, Morey coming in and making the trades he made. I mean, the Al Horford signing was awful. I think everyone agrees to that.
Yeah.
Awful. Even the money aspect of it aside, even when they made the signing, I just didn't understand the basketball fit. I didn't think there was any basketball fit unless he was going to be like a backup. And so Morey comes in, finally gets them the shooting that they have long desired, or that they traded away earlier on. They had, you know, some stretch shooting with Robert Covington, but they get shooters with Seth Curry and Danny Green. And it's just kind of like a bunch of factors coming together. You got a vet like Danny Green, Doc Rivers, a respected vet. Maybe that's the voice that speaks to Embiid, and Brett Brown wasn't, you know, as intangible as that can be. Who knows? I don't know. Sometimes with guys that do have more immature personalities, they don't respect anyone but the right figure. So maybe it was something, you know, to that effect. But Zach, I think they're going to be legit in the playoffs. They got the seventh best defense in the league. They've got Embiid playing, you know, at like Elijah Wan levels. And Ben Simmons has even been stepping it up lately, to his credit. I have long shredded Ben Simmons for his lack of you know, improvement in his game and not diversifying his game. And I've been saying his offensive ceiling has been reached, because that's what the numbers say, honestly. But in this past week or two, he's had some really big games, even for him.
Let me give you his last four games. He's averaging 28, 9, 8, and then 1.3 steals while shooting 69, 79.5 from the free throw line.
Like, will that continue in the playoffs? We'll have to see. But give him credit for playing how he's playing. I think Philadelphia's very legit.
I agree. I think they are legit, too.
All right, so let's go to next listener question. The MVP. Oh, can James Harden break into the MVP race?
Yes. He's in it. He should be in it. I mean,
I have him. I just posted my top 10, I think, yesterday or a couple days ago. I have him 7 right now, and I have him ahead of KD.
I mean, I think the only argument against him is the lack of games he's played with Brooklyn, but that's eventually going to add up. And if they keep winning at the rate that they're winning, I don't see how he's out of it. He's going to be averaging. I mean, KD is out of it solely because of how many games he's missed.
Right.
And I think Harden has outplayed Kyrie and kind of been their engine. I don't have his numbers. I'll pull up his numbers, but I think it's close to a triple double.
He's averaging efficiency. It's like more rebounds, assists, steals, and threes than KD right now. They're 6-3 with Harden, 5-5. Without Harden,
man, he's got 25 a game, 11 dimes, which is higher than when his career high when he almost won MVP the year that Russ won it. 8 boards a game, and he's shooting 50% from the field, 41 from three, 88 from free throw. I mean, that's MVP.
Jared,
okay, so the short answer is no, but I also think too, like, I have a hard time with all these conversations, particularly like, where's the line that we draw when we say the race? Like, right. If you want to put him in your top 10, all right, I haven't done a top, I do a top 5 every week. Yeah. Okay. I can see a way you could put him in the top 10. Fine. But I do the top 5 because when we vote, we only get 5 lines to put. So that's kind of in my mind, the race. So is he in that? In my mind? No. The other problem I have with this, and this is why I can't wait for Kevin Durant to get back on the court with them, is because let me throw this out there too before I get to that. The other part of it too is there's a psychological component to the voting that you have to take into account, the human element here of the voter.
Like, as in people being susceptible to narratives?
Correct. Yes. Absolutely. But I also don't feel like we got to be careful with that a little bit too. But mostly, like, the dude took the first 2 months of the season off, right? And I get how great he's playing now, but he decided not to play the first 2 months of the season, right? And that's,
I say 4 games Harden took off.
But he wasn't in shape for the first part of it either. I mean, those last 4 games, yeah, he was throwing the ball away and stuff. But what about the first, whatever, 10
first
games?
First game he played, it came out with a 41 burger. I mean,
well, it depends. Look, let me ask you this. Where do you, I mean, when you vote for the MVP, are you factoring in and considering training camp?
No. It's just, it's about the complete season. And for me, like, go back to last season, for example, that's why I voted for Giannis as opposed to LeBron, because Giannis from start to finish was the best player on the best team, who I also had for defensive player of the year, right? Like, nothing against the guy being second, but LeBron wasn't as good from November through March, whatever we did. Right. And LeBron came on and had a monster last 2 months of the season, whatever it was. The most important part, though, that I want to get to about this Harden argument, and I think this is the make or break on whether they win a championship, which obviously not in the MVP conversation, but I think you'll see the tie together, is that if the Nets don't recognize internally and externally that Kevin Durant is their best and most important player, they're screwed. He has to be their best player. They have 3 great players. They have 3 potential future Hall of Famers. I get it. And I get that they all have different attributes. Kevin Durant is next level good. Next level from Kyrie. If James Harden is the MVP of the Nets, then that means they're not winning at all, because they're not taking advantage of who Kevin Durant is and can be.
So my thoughts, I mean, you look back on history, I see this with, like, you might disagree and it might be nitpicking, but there's guys like Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire, Stockton and Malone, where there's certain situations, I mean, that have to go back to bring up a lot more, but there's many, many, many situations where there's the most valuable player and then there's always the best player on the team. And they both can coexist. And I truly think Harden can be the most valuable player out of this team, but KD will always be the best.
But then you can't win an MVP of the league if you're not the best player on your team. But right? Like I get your argument. Your argument makes perfect sense for the context of the Nets. But if you're going to be the MVP of the league, you can't be the second best player on your team. That will never happen.
Well, I get what you're saying, but I'm saying that Kevin Durant simply just missed too many games.
No, I totally get that, and that's why he is not in the running for it anymore. I get it. You're right.
So would that preclude Harden being in your top five?
I just hope that by the time Durant gets back in the rest of the season, the numbers are going to come down for Harden. And yeah, what they're going to do is take advantage of Durant's greatness.
I guess what I'm saying is I think they're going to your point, kind of in a weird way, because you said they have to recognize that Durant is their best player. I think that they do, and they're being cautious with him and just kind of holding him.
Oh, 100%.
No, you know what I mean? Like putting him in bubble wrap and just kind of, because they're winning without him. So, you know, at some point he's going to have to play to prove that he's still in shape and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I agree with you. I mean, Kevin Durant is what makes them. Harden is what will be good enough to get them to the Western Conference Finals, even if KD wasn't on the team, in my opinion. Right. Sorry, I'm so trained. The Eastern Conference Finals. I'm so used to Harden on the Rockets. But Kevin Durant is what's good enough to get them into the finals and good enough to win the finals. So I agree with you. Who would be your top five if the season ended right now? Mine, just to let you know, I think it goes to Embiid right now.
Yeah, so I for the first time this week, I changed my number one spot from LeBron to Embiid. So I went Embiid, LeBron, Lillard.
It's hard to pick someone over Harden, honestly. I mean,
Kawhi.
My top three. You have Kawhi? My top three was Embiid, LeBron.
I got Jokic at two.
Oh, sorry.
I got Jokic at two.
At two?
Yep, I got Embiid, Jokic, LeBron at three, Dame, and Giannis.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, the record has to matter and the ranking has to matter, which was my biggest beef with.
That's
Jared, real quick to that effect, since you're a voter, if James Harden, let's just say James Harden goes on and wins it all, wins the MVP, you know, finishes the season with these numbers on extreme efficiency, KD's missed a lot of games. So he's not in contention for the award by technicality. Harden wins it. Does Houston get any claim to that MVP?
Oh my God. This fucking curious. Guy.
I was just curious. I mean, like, how would that break down? I don't know, by rule.
Oh my goodness.
No comment.
Yeah. I think what date is it? Today is February 23rd. I am contractually not allowed to talk about the Houston Rockets past this date.
There we go. On to an award that might include the Houston Rockets.
Might.
Andy Roth, AR Hoop Talk. Andy Roth, the most competitive award right now, is the most improved player of the year, which is my favorite award every year. I just love watching people grow up and improve. Who do you got there right now? Give me
I have all these like note cards all around my desk here, which I like prepare for like shows and stuff. I literally have note cards like all over the place. I keep notes. I swear to you, I started keeping this list the other day. So when I saw that on Twitter, I was like, nice. I finally have some place to talk about this. So I agree. I think it is the most competitive, most improved. I came up right off the top of my head when I did this the other day with nine guys. You have 15. Wow. I tried to be a little slimmer with that. Now
I won't touch on them all.
All right. You want me to just rattle them off here?
Yeah, go for it.
I have one rule with most improved. No second year players.
After last year, this is the only thing I'm going to say to that. Luka was a historical all-time God-level jump. Right. That's the only time somebody should have ever won in their second year. And because he didn't, I bow down to your rule right now, and I'll never touch on a second-year guy. There's not a second-year player in my top 15 ever again.
All right, so here, no particular order. Here's my nine guys, and then I'll start to get rid of some guys here quickly from the nine. But here are the nine. Jeremy Grant, Christian Wood, Julius Randle, Colin Sexton, OG Anunoby, Jordan Clarkson, Nick Batum, Mikal Bridges, and Gary Trent Jr.
Nicholas Batum. There's the sleeper of the bunch. I love it.
I don't love him on this list, but
no, but I love
I think Christian Wood's games played are going to hurt him in this whole thing, right? Obviously got off to the monster start.
He's six for me.
OG, you know, he's got to play some more games. I don't know if people were paying attention to this. Before OG got hurt, he was on such a freaking tear on both sides of the ball. It was unbelievable. Sexton's obviously cooled down substantially since that hot start he got off to, and the Cavs suck now. I would say, you know, it's going to come down in my mind to, it's going to ultimately come down to Jeremy Grant and Julius Randle. I think those are the top two, right? Nobody disagrees with that. There's no, can that change over the second half of the season? Yeah, but those are the two. And then, you know, I love, you know, throwing in Gary Trent Jr. and Mikal Bridges. I think, and then Jordan Clarkson one is going to be interesting too, because I don't know that Clarkson's minutes are that different than in the past.
Yeah,
Zach, I don't know if you remember, I had Gary Trent Jr. before the season, and I remember you.
I do remember
scoffing at that, being like, "What?" I agree with you, man. I think it's going to come down to Julius Randle and Jeremy Grant, and I think I'm leaning based on the production up to this point, assuming, you know, it remains somewhat constant and static at least. I think it's Jeremy Grant's to lose. I think the leap that he made was more significant. Julius Randle's playing elite basketball. I think, Zach, you told me the numbers that he's averaging have only been done by Larry Bird in the past, which is incredible.
Yeah.
But I mean, Jeremy Grant's just taken such a leap, and frankly, maybe I'm biased because I didn't think he had this big of a leap in him. So I've been surprised, and for that reason, I would go with him, but it's Jeremy Grant in my opinion.
You talk about narrative before. It's so funny with Julius Randle, right? On one hand, it's going to be held against him because we, out of college, expected this out of him.
Right.
And then on the other hand, the other side of the argument is going to be, well, he was so bad for his first, 4 or 5 years in the league. Look how great he is now. Right. Right? Like, we're going to get both sides of those arguments, which is going to be nauseating to watch on Twitter. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I hate the term expected, okay? A jump is a jump. The award isn't biggest surprise, you know? It's most improved. There's no, like, asterisk by it or any caveat like that. It's just who's taken the biggest jump, who gained the most in their game. And I mean, to me, it can be a guy like Jaylen Brown, Nikola Jokic, and it can be a guy that's not really, really improving their skill set, but improving, like, just because of their role. I mean, just getting more minutes.
But that's the yearly argument of, is it opportunity or is it improvement? It can be both. But I think the people who are going to, you know, we're going to hear these Knicks fans who are going to come out of the woodwork for Julius Randle on this award and don't even know what team Jeremy Grant is on. But they're ultimately going to make the argument that, you know, it's only because Jeremy Grant went to a terrible team and he went from being the fifth option on the Nuggets to being the first option on the bad Pistons to why he's doing this. Right. And I'm not saying I agree with that argument. I'm just saying that's going to be the argument.
So I agree, Jeremy Grant, he's number one, like, far and beyond right now, but...
Well, I disagree. I would go, right now, I'd go Randle 1, Grant 2. I would.
Okay.
But I don't hate anybody who says
Grant. I would go so far as to say if the Knicks were, I think they're the 7th seed right now, if they were, like, solidly locked in at a 6 or maybe even a 5, you could put a sleeper, like, not top 5, but maybe a top 10 MVP name for Julius Randle. Just for fun, I guess.
The whole time, going back to the start of the conversation that we were having, the whole time with saying any of that this particular year is that you're literally a 2-game losing streak away from going from the 7th seed to the 13th seed. You're a 2-game winning streak from going from the 7th seed to the 4th seed. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's been that in the Western Conference for a few years.
Yeah, you're right. You
know, but Zach.
I got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at number 5. I had him before the year as my guy to win it. I just think a lot of it for him is the role. I've expected this out of him forever, and I thought he'd do this, but they've been hanging around and really competitive in a lot of games for how shitty that roster is. One thing I want to run by you guys is A guy like Nikola Jokic, though. I mean, you brought up Nick Batum.
Yeah.
Think about Jokic here. I mean, a lot of it's mindset. He's changed his mindset from a pass-first player to, I'm going to be a killer at scoring. I mean, he's went up 7 points per game. His three-point percentage is up 9 right now, almost 10 percentage points. Rebounds are up 2 from last year. He's averaging a career high in assists. I think you can be in the MVP race and the most improved. I really believe that. But
yeah, well, the year that Curry won his second MVP, I gave some long thought, spent a lot of time at this desk looking over numbers and giving some hard thought, talking to a lot of people about put Curry as most improved. I really feel like, and maybe it's some recency bias here, but I feel like that Curry second MVP year was the first time we ever had that conversation about an elite player who wasn't injured or who wasn't quote unquote bad the year before winning most valuable, most improved player. I feel like that's the first time I remember that conversation ever happening. And then we tried to apply it last year to Luka, who was in the MVP conversation for a while, to most improved player as well. I think you absolutely, and you know, for that matter, if we're going to put Jokic in the conversation, why wouldn't we put Embiid in the conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Embiid's production has jumped.
I think the biggest stat, though, for Jokic, to go back to your original point about Jokic about becoming a killer, is that he's gone from taking less than 15 shots a game to taking 18 shots a game. That's the biggest thing. That's the mindset that he needs to have. Like, you know, good on him for having all these assists and stuff, but he is the most difficult player potentially in the NBA to guard. And I get a lot of that has to do with his passing ability. That will always be a threat, but he's got to take advantage of defenses being vulnerable. And that's more times than not when you're playing the Nuggets. You are vulnerable.
Zach, any other names for most improved?
I mean, we mentioned basically most of them. I'm not going to go through everyone. The only other guy I really want to throw out there, though, I'll go Fred VanVleet. I'll give him a shout-out. I think he's becoming more and more of like a second-option type guy versus a third or fourth.
I disagree with putting VanVleet in this conversation, but if I am going to make the argument, I'm going to say he's going from a second to third option to a first option. I think there are most nights he is their most important offensive player because of how inconsistent Siakam is.
Love it.
So I wanted to talk about, Jared, the Utah Jazz. The Utah Jazz are number one in the West. I think they're 25-6. Yeah, they're 25-6. 3.5 games up on number two, the Clippers, and the Lakers tied. But more importantly, they're 4 games up in the L column on both of those teams. They're slowly starting to kind of break away from the pack. Now, we've seen this before where teams like the Jazz that are very well-rounded, not great necessarily individually, but just very, you know, solid across the board, well-coached, fundamental, all that kind of stuff, and that have good, really good chemistry, like the Hawks from a few years ago. That won, you know, 60 games in the regular season and then got swept in the conference finals. What do you think about these Jazz? You know, where are you at with them?
I love them for now. I think the biggest question that I think you're getting at here and that we all have is, do they have a guy on their roster that in a playoff game and then a series and then multiple series has that takeover ability night in and night out, especially when the defense is focused in on them?
I say yes. I just don't think they have the number two or three guy they need.
I mean, look, Donovan Mitchell can be that guy. I think he's proven.
He showed in that Denver series how good he can be, right? And I think this year we've seen Donovan Mitchell be a smarter basketball player. I think we've seen him play a lot better with the ball in and out of his hands. And I think Conley's been a lot better. And I think Jordan Clarkson's been sensational. And I think they have two incredible perimeter threats in Bogdanovich and Ingles.
People forget Bogdanovich got hurt before the playoffs last season.
Yeah, and he was a huge miss for them. And, you know, speaking about a team that likes each other, like, it's really weird because we had this whole thing last March with Rudy and Donovan Mitchell. And I don't know exactly where that is right now. You know, they say it's all good. I don't need to overanalyze that. But I can tell you from being in the bubble, the rest of the team, they like each other. Or at least they respect each other for being around each other. I know there have been times that other stuff has crept up in that locker room, but I think for the most part, there are a bunch of guys, especially with Ingles being the joker that he is, and the sarcastic guy that he is, he keeps things light. I don't know that everybody understands that, because sometimes there's, I think, international lost in translation things with all the different languages and cultures that they have in that locker room. But I think for the most part, they like each other or respect each other. And when Bogdanović was not there, I don't know if you guys heard this story. I did this on TNT during the playoffs last year. Because Bogdanović couldn't even travel with them to the bubble, they took a picture of Bogdanović. And because they had their own floor in the hotel room, like each team had their own floor. So the elevator bank, you know, when the elevator doors open and close, yep. It was a massive picture of Bogdanović's face.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So that's a cool story from the bubble that the Jazz did to make him feel like he was there, or make them feel like he was there. Right. Like it was a cool little thing that they did, which really signaled to me, like, if that's a dude who people are like, he's a jerk, like, you're not doing that. You're not going out of your way to do that for him. And I also think too, what we're going to start to see, and hear, speaking of narrative, Quinn Snyder is a freaking genius.
Oh, yeah. And, top three.
Yeah. And, you know, I wonder with the lack of success that Boston's having and the amount of success that Utah's having, if that boy genius title is going to be stripped of Brad Stevens and replaced by Quinn Snyder.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy how Utah's had like the same culture and the same vibe since I've been alive, pretty much. You know, like the Stockton Malone Jazz almost never died. It just felt like, because then it went to Deron Williams and Carlos Boozer. Now it's, you know, Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, obviously stylistically different, but just that same, you know what you're getting with the Utah Jazz year in and year out. Sometimes they overperform. Rarely do they underperform. They're sound defensively. You know, Jerry Sloan has been, the torch has been handed to Quinn Snyder. So they've just been solidly good for this long. But in the playoffs, I do think that ultimately the NBA game is a game where you have elite talent, and elite talent ultimately wins out when you have enough of it over the types of teams that do things, you know, well. And I'm a fan of a team that was sweating bullets against Quinn Snyder, so I know what he's, you know, capable of in the playoffs in terms of adjustments and X's and O's.
You say you were sweating bullets?
Man, those games, people forget, like, the Rockets gentlemanly swept the Jazz.
Man, both times. I was never worried for the Rockets against those guys.
Look, go run some of those games back, though. The one, I think they won the series on it, or they went up 3-1 on it the second year in 2019. They had like two or three wide open 3-point looks. I think Rubio either airballed one or just totally bricked it down the stretch. They could have won any of those games. Chris Paul had to go Super Saiyan to close them out in 5 in 2018. Otherwise, I was going back to Utah 3-2. Like those teams are, you don't blow them out. You might get one or two in the series, but ultimately, I was going to close by saying I don't see them ultimately getting past LeBron James, though. So
I do see them as the deepest Jazz team in I don't know how long. I like their bench. I mean, Georges Niang just went 7-for-7 last night. Jordan Clarkson leveling up to be a sixth man of the year type guy. I just think maybe strength and numbers can get these guys where they want to go. Who knows? But they're going to need to do that.
Maybe that explains why Georges Niang got multiple all-star votes by his peers.
Oh, players. Shit.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one. All right.
It's my favorite thing to do every year when they release the voting results. I go through and make a list of the most ridiculous guys to get votes by the players. Most ridiculous list. Mafondo Cabanjelli. And by the way, I only count guys who got more than one vote, because I totally understand that some dudes have to vote for themselves. So this is players voting for players.
Okay.
And they're not testing for weed this year. Remember that.
Right. Right. Correct. Is this hijacking your podcast? I don't mean to do that. It's just my favorite.
No. Bring it. Go for it. We love it, dude. It's what we do.
I think it's Mafondo, right? Cabanjelli. Is it?
Yeah, that's fair.
He received a couple of votes. What team, and I need help with this, what team is Robert Woodard on?
God damn it.
I know the answer now, by the way, but.
I don't. He sounds like a Boston Celtic.
No,
he's, I know that's a not.
The fact of the matter is that we're talking to two guys who host an NBA podcast.
Oh, the Kings.
Right. He's on the Kings. And I I live and breathe and sleep the NBA nonstop, and I've never heard of Robert Woodard. Two NBA players this year voted for him for the All-Star team.
I know who he is. I just forgot what team he was.
Here's a trivia question for you. Easy one. How many games has Jaren Jackson Jr. played? And do you think he got more or less than that number in All-Star votes by players?
I think zero games.
I think he got more.
Yeah. He's played in zero games this year. Five NBA players thought Jaren Jackson Jr. was worthy of an All-Star vote to start in the All-Star game.
Where does this data come from?
The NBA releases it.
They release it? Okay.
Yeah. So here, I got a couple more for you. Xavier Tillman received 4 votes by players to start in the All-Star game.
I mean, maybe Jaylen, the rising stars.
Jaylen Adams received 5 votes from fellow players to start in the NBA All-Star game.
He's probably pushing 10 minutes total this year.
Sekou Doumbouya probably voted for himself, and then two other players decided he's worthy of starting.
I still believe in you, Sekou.
Otto Porter got 2 votes. Precious Achiuwa got 3 votes. Blake Griffin.
Gosh.
Got 5 votes from NBA players to start in the All-Star game this year.
Wow. Zaza still getting voted in.
At least the Zaza thing happened because the country of Jordan, the country of Georgia, voted for him. That was a fan vote. That was a fan thing. These are NBA players who bitch and moan about how the media votes for All-Star games and postseason awards, and yet they think that TJ McConnell is worthy of 4 votes to start in the All-Star game.
Well, maybe he's the Pacers MVP. Maybe they know that he's the engine of that backup unit. Nah. Zach, Jazz, what do you think? Hot flop in the playoffs. Are you buying or are you selling on the Jazz?
I will say this till eternity, until I see them competing in a 6-7 game second round series with this squad. I will never believe in them till that moment, even if they are 10 games up on everybody in the regular season. I need to see more than Donovan Mitchell perform in the playoffs and being able to compete with the LA teams. I just think there's that big of a gap. And even Denver, I believe in it a little more.
All right, Jared, we have another fan question I want to get to.
Real quick, who do you guys think has a better shot of getting further in the playoffs right now, Phoenix or Utah?
Phoenix.
Utah. Wow.
So I like Phoenix a lot.
I like them both a lot. But
two things lead me to answer Utah. Number one, I firmly believe in the NBA. There is an advantage to having a bad taste in your mouth from previous years with that same group. Like, yes. Utah blowing a 3-1 lead to Denver is probably as much of a reason why they lead the league in wins this year as anything else, right? Like, they are so motivated. Look through history. Like, look how the Warriors' run began. Mark Jackson's last year, disappointing loss in the playoffs. Look at even Kobe airball, right, early in his career in Utah. Just things like that. You look at the Spurs, the way they lost to Ray Allen and the Heat, what that did that next year. I'm not predicting Utah to win a championship. I'm just saying they will go further than Phoenix because Phoenix has too many young players. Like, as much as we think of Chris Paul, Devin Booker's never been there. Never been there. And particularly, like, what he did in the bubble was such a different environment than what he probably will face this year in the playoffs, particularly now that most teams are getting fans in the stands and travel and all that. And Bridges never been there. Ayton's never been there. Cam Johnson's never been there.
Yeah.
There's only so much that these young players will have. That's why I think Utah easily will go further in the playoffs than Phoenix.
I'll peel back what I said and I'll modify. I'll modify with this. And also just logistically, as of right now, they're the one seed. So they're going to have an easier path on paper, at least. They might actually meet in the second round. But I was going to say, I think Phoenix's potential is higher. Like, they could catch fire if the Chris Paul effect actually works and radiates to the other teammates in the postseason. And Devin Booker is the truth, because you're right, we still don't know. And they also have Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder's been there as well. So they have, like, the backbone. But I think their ceiling is higher. Like, if they achieve max potential in the playoffs, they could go higher. But I think you're right. Utah is a better bet. What were you going to say, Zach?
Yeah, so two options here. Instead of going into some of these listener questions, we could finish. Sean's just... from the West, I know you have tweeted out your reserve picks, Jared, so you can kind of tell me what your thoughts are here. Let's start in the West. We got Chris Paul, Paul George, Damian Lillard, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Zion Williamson, and Anthony Davis are the reserves.
And now keep in mind the West, and this is what I was thinking about doing when I released mine. We all know Anthony Davis is not going to play in the All-Star game. So do you put Anthony Davis in there? He's earned the honor. Let him get that spot. And then now you got to think about who's the next guy. So I would imagine based on this, Devin Booker is going to be an All-Star based on this list right here.
And would he be the only one you'd replace off that list?
Yeah, this is, I think this is exactly what I did not have Chris Paul.
Same.
That's interesting. You know, that this is where the voting is weird. Like, you're telling me you think Chris Paul is more deserving of an All-Star bid than Devin Booker? Like, this to me is a lifetime achievement award. Chris Paul's had a great year, and he certainly is deserving of it. But I don't know.
I mean, it's a reputation award, sounds like, you know?
Right. I guess I had, the only difference in mine was I had Booker instead of Chris Paul.
What about Zion?
Yeah, I had Zion.
I did too. For me, to replace Anthony Davis, I'd probably give it to DeMar DeRozan, to be honest.
Here's the thing about DeRozan, and this happens every year with so many guys. If his name was not DeMar DeRozan and I gave you his numbers on that team, would you think that's All-Star numbers?
No.
You're thinking DeMar DeRozan's been an All-Star. He should be an All-Star. Like that's what seeps into your mind. I'm a psychologist. I need a psychologist. Sorry.
There we go.
I think the only player I might have on this list, I just don't know who I'd replace, though, is the problem. But one player I think that could contend for the list is Shai Gilgeous. Shai Gilgeous.
No way.
Yeah. You got to earn it. His time isn't now.
I think is more compelling. Let's go to the East because I think way more compelling about who got
it is.
Here.
No, there was like a 20-person list that I could almost accept. So from the East, James Harden, Julius Randle, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Zach LaVine, baby, Ben Simmons, and Nikola Vucevic. Okay. I'm so happy for Zach. That was the big debate there. And
I'm with you. I had Zach in there.
I know you did. The biggest surprise for me right off the bat is Ben Simmons and Vucevic. Both are deserving, but I did not have Ben Simmons in. I had Domantas Sabonis over him.
I did too. I had Sabonis over Simmons. I think this is going to be the factor of Philadelphia's in first place. I got to put two guys on my ballot from Philadelphia. But I also think the other part of it is, I think there's a lot of people right now that feel like they're going to vote for Ben Simmons for Defensive Player of the Year, or at least in the top two of that conversation. I'm not saying whether I agree with that at this point, but that's, I think, the thinking. And I think that they wanted to give that some weight. But I think the biggest snub from this list is Chris Middleton.
His name, right?
What's that?
Is it just because of his name?
I think it's because the Bucks are not in first place. And I think maybe Middleton got rewarded the last couple of years because the Bucks were in first place and they needed to have two All-Stars. But now that they're not, and the crazy part is it sucks to look at All-Stars and say they're having a better year than they had because it's all relative to what their peers are doing this particular year. But like Middleton,
50-40-90.
And
almost.
Does he still lead the team in assists? I think he still leads the Bucks in assists, right?
He's definitely having the best season of his career in terms of playmaking. Right. I think he's got like just under six a game. Let me see.
The one, so
5.7.
The two differences I had on this list was I had Sabonis for Simmons and I had Middleton for Jaylen Brown. I left Jaylen Brown off. Particularly, you know, I don't know if we're going to go, with the whole thing that the Sixers deserve two because they're in first place, then do the Celtics deserve two being in sixth place? So
and 7 in their last 10.
Right.
Okay.
To kind of bolster your argument, it would make more sense to split that up and give Indiana one. Cause I think they're number four. So,
right.
And Sabonis has been playing out of his mind. So, I mean, I think you could go either way. I'm kind of offended at how quickly you both dismissed SGA. I would propose, you probably vehemently disagree with all of this, but
13. I mean,
Look, man, numbers wise and record wise, he's not too. I mean, he's not more deserving than.
Is he but top 10 not, in any category?
He's also not too far off from Zion. I don't think so. But he is shooting 50 and 40. Let's see. I mean, 23 and almost 7 a game.
I mean,
better than 2-1.
Him and De'Aaron Fox are kind of splitting hairs there.
Yeah, but that right. That's a case, right. If I was going to put a guy from a bad team on there, I'd put De'Aaron Fox, and I don't think Fox deserves it.
Fair enough. I'm not going to go to bat for SGA.
Yeah.
But I think the East.
This time's coming real soon.
Yeah, it is. I think the East is a little more up for grabs. I mean, there's just a lot of good talent individually. I'm glad LaVine got it, though. I feel like LaVine's been getting disrespected. But first of all, his game is just ridiculous. It's so smooth, and he's been so confident in himself. And just in terms of the numbers, like they're also off the charts. So
yeah, I feel like we, you know, and this is a conversation that they'll have here, I'm sure, on TNT once they get on and release these officially. But like, there's the argument. I think we too many people, as you guys know, don't watch enough of the games. And they either look at the stats and they look at them in two different ways. They look at the stats and they're like, oh, he's on a bad team. Those are empty numbers. Or they look at the stats and like, oh my God, how do you not have this guy? He's number two in the league in scoring. He's number three in the league in assists. He's got to be there, right? Like, as opposed to looking at Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine, two guys on terrible basketball teams, even though the Bulls are probably overachieving, but they're still a bad basketball team. And watch their impact each night. Like, every time the Bulls win, Zach LaVine has something to do with it, right? Even games that they lose, it's generally not his fault, right? And I don't mean to be like a Zach LaVine apologist here, but like, Zach LaVine is not putting up empty numbers. The other guy I want to throw out here, which I came to a realization a couple of years ago with this whole All-Star team, when I was getting in this massive argument with one of my buddies or on TV or something doing about this. And it just hit me like, dude, relax. This is really, it's the fans' game. It's an All-Star weekend where it's supposed to be celebrating the game, where the fans get the people they want to play they want to watch to play on the court together for one time a year. And I think that's what kind of chilled me out about it. With that being said, I think that costs a lot of really good players the opportunity to go to that game. And a guy that I'm surprised made it here is Vooch, because again, watching games this year, he's a freaking beast. And I almost feel bad for him that he's on the Magic at this point. Like, I
almost,
right. I do feel bad for him. Right. Exactly.
Terrible.
Wondering like what he would be. I was having this conversation with somebody who's a Celtics apologist the other day, And I was going over my All-Star picks, and I said I was going to pick Vooch, and he's like, well, where's Jaylen Brown? I go, bro, have you watched Vooch? And he goes, those are empty numbers. The Magic suck. And I said to him, If he gets traded to the Celtics, you will be tweeting every night that Vooch needs to be an all NBA player.
Yep.
Right? Like, come on.
Dude, so he's 24 and 11. This is career high by 5 points per game, and he's been an All-Star twice.
Right. He's not sexy. He's not going to have these crazy dunks or these crazy plays in the All-Star game that's going to make people buy his jersey, but he deserves it. And I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, and it's funny, like how him and Sabonis, it's almost like you feel like they had to pick one, you know, one of the tall all around playmaking shooting.
But it's like they're tied with Boston. And I think Sabonis is just as valuable and as good as Jaylen Brown, if not better. Jaylen Brown has only been this good for this season.
Right. Like, and Jaylen Brown, as good as he has been. And again, it should just be about this season, but as good as he has been, he's still the second guy of that team. Sabonis, I don't want to hear, listen, I love Malcolm Brogdon,
yeah,
but Sabonis is the best player on that team.
Yeah. I'm with you. And it's not even close. I mean, to have a big man averaging 6 assists like that, very few have ever done that.
So, Zach, I have something I want to touch on, unless you want to go for it.
No, we got a couple more minutes here.
Yeah, we got a couple more minutes before we wrap this up. I want to ask, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like Milwaukee's been going under the radar a little bit. I think they lost like 5 in a row when Drew went out. But I think that the changes they made, at least in terms of basketball, their record hasn't reflected it yet. But in terms of substantive basketball, I think they did get better equipped for the playoffs. But they're kind of under the radar right now. How do you think the top of the East is going to play out? Because it's really only, in my opinion, it's only going to come down to Philly, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee, and maybe Boston if they get legitimately healthy and can peak at the right time. But how do you see the top of the East shaking out?
Yeah, I really agree with you. I think that Milwaukee kind of learned from the last 2 years that trying to set the record for wins in the regular season doesn't win you anything in the playoffs. And while you should try and develop the right habits and learn how to win, what Milwaukee was doing, and I had a conversation with someone on the Milwaukee coaching staff about this last year, it almost hurt them that Milwaukee was blowing out their opponents at the rate that they were the last 2 years. Because what was happening was, like their margin of victory last year was almost historic. And they over the last 2 years, they've had the most 20-point wins. They've had the most double-digit wins. And then they go into the playoffs, and rarely do you get a, you know, blowout in the playoffs. And or even, you know, whatever. You get a close game. You got to learn how to win those. And even though it's great that you've won, you know, 57, 58, 59 games, if you don't have experience in, you know, nut-crunching time, then you don't know what your weaknesses and when your strengths are. And I also think, too, the minutes for Giannis, like he was on the court the other night. They were blowing somebody out, and he was still on the court. I was like, it's good. Like he needs to get those. He needs to get that experience of closing out a game, even in a blowout, finishing off games, getting those extra minutes. So, yeah, I think that they are. Their record's not going to reflect it, but I think Milwaukee is better equipped for a playoff series this year than they have been the last 2 years.
Completely agree. I'm not worried about them for a minute. The crazy thing is, though, I think you kind of alluded to this, but they've kind of just relaxed a little bit. I mean, they've been a top defense the last few years, and they're average right now. They're like 10 or 12, wherever you want to throw them. But I just think they are better equipped to play a better defense and make winning plays when it matters down the clutch where they've struggled in the past.
And keep in mind, that five-game losing streak coincided with Jrue Holiday missing all those games.
That's what I said, yeah.
They
lost five when Jrue went out, and he's right. Still been out.
Right.
Before that, they were, I don't know, 18 or something and eight. Like 18, whatever. Yeah. They were good. And they're still, look, they went on the five-game skid. I think they've lost even more than that a little bit, not in a row, but just overall. And they're still number three, and they're right in the hunt for number one. So they're going to be fine. Who, you know, the way that from what we've seen basketball wise so far, assuming full health, how do you see the East shaking out though? Out of those three, maybe four.
I think it'll probably be Philly one, Brooklyn two, Milwaukee three. I mean, probably just in the regular season. That's the way it'll fall.
I'm saying, then, who's your horse coming out?
I'd love to see Philly, Brooklyn in the East Finals. And then I'd lean towards Brooklyn. You know, they should win. That's who should win. You know, yeah. So now it's on them. The expectations. They've heard it from me. They got to go win.
Cool. Shut up. Oh, real quick, I wanted to ask this question. By the way, we have a couple. Real quick, just a fan asked this. They asked, "What is more important in the NBA? Someone who guards 40 possessions or someone who is efficient with their defensive possessions?" Interesting question. I thought. What do you think, Jared?
It is interesting.
Efficient in their possessions.
Yeah, I would say efficient.
Efficient? Okay.
Yeah.
Instead of a workhorse defender? So, like, we're talking maybe like a, you know, maybe like a Trevor Ariza versus like a lockdown specialist? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I also think, too, per team, like, I know Michael Malone told me this a couple of years ago. Like, he hates guys. He hates looking at steals. You know, he thinks that, like, guys who come up with a lot of steals are often labeled as great defenders, but like with the defensive scheme, he likes to play with his teams.
The stuff steal. You do defensively doesn't show up. It's like a cornerback. Right. I mean, if you're locking your guy down, right, you're not throwing your way, you know?
Right.
I hate defensive stats. They are not accurate at all, in my opinion.
And I also think too, like last thing, blocks per game, you get, even if you lead the world and set a record and have five blocks per game, that's five out of 80 possessions. It's not a lot. So a guy who has like 1.5 blocks per game doesn't mean he's a great rim protector.
That's true.
He blocked one shot out of 100 possessions.
So this is about to expire. I want to get it in. It does potentially suggest that he blocks that many and alters even, you know, more. But I feel what you're right. saying.
Yes.
It's not perfectly indicative. But Jared, we had a ton of fun, man. This thing's
about to awesome,
bomb on us, man. We'll do it again.
Yeah,
thank you, sir. Anytime.
Thank you, guys.
Great seeing you, Jared. Take care,
guys. Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you, sir. Absolutely.